Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very, very happy to be able to broadcast to you, especially given the fact that...
This morning, your sun is on the rise once again. We heard the distance to go away. Anything can happen.
Much trouble in the world, but that's why we're here at New Day, Resurrection and Liberation, because it is a new day, and the sun definitely is shining. Before we open up tonight's program, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are certainly very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Before we get started with our dialogue for tonight, we want to let you know that New Day is now in its seventh year. That's right, 7 years of continual broadcasting live and living color and bringing you and speaking truth to power, but bringing you the absolute best in so many different areas of things and getting better. That's a very beautiful thing. And what we mean by that is very soon we're going to have a Facebook just for New Day, so that you can now go there every day, do your postings, put your information out, and so forth and so on. That's what our seventh year means to us, that we get even better now. And we have some other things that we're working on, too, to make our broadcast even more productive, more potent, and definitely more powerful. Before, again, we begin tonight's segment and tell you what's going to be happening tonight, we want to just send a very, very important thank you out to those that attended today's Black Community Gentrification, or shall we say anti-gentrification meeting that took place again at the Church of the Advocate over at 18th and Diamond Street, Historical Church of the Advocate here in Philadelphia. This was our third session, and once again, it was really, really good. And again, it's growing. As we are building a national network, as many of you already know, to address this issue of land grabbing, taking over, and so forth and so on, many of our people have gone through foreclosures, evictions, eminent domain, all kinds of stuff. And it's all related to population control. So while we say the word gentrification as it pertains particularly to what we call housing, property, land, the bigger picture has to do with social engineering. So we're going to talk a lot more about that as we proceed this month, but we want to remind you that as we're saying gentrification, there's another kind of reality to that when you look at the bigger picture. And you know, one of the things that the Men and Women Movement is now very adamant about as we proceed in developing not only our movement, but developing nations amongst our people. We're talking about being very ready for what we know is getting ready to come, but also to make it very clear to the rest of the world that Africans in North America, understand what time it is, and recharge genocide. So as we proceed in dealing with the day-to-day issues that we have before us on a regular basis, we know that there is some other things that have to be done simultaneously. And certainly we heard today several people who were really fed up, you know, as many are nationwide, fed up with what's going on, what's happening with our people. And one of the beautiful things that were brought out today, we fed up with some of these so-called politicians, I'm sorry. And people are really now ready to change some of that. And so I think we've learned some lessons in these past years, and I feel very, very optimistic in saying that some change is on the rise. We said today it was a new day. Brother stood up and said, oh, it's another new day. And eventually I ended up taking him out in the hall and talking with him on a one-on-one and finally getting through to him that, you know, understand his frustration, understand his disappointment. You know, many of us have been down that road, but the point now is, what are you going to do now? So that's where we're at. Tonight, we're going to begin to address that, meaning solutions. Well, on our live line coming up is a brother who I've heard so much about and finally was able to track him down. And it's so important because we're going to deal with part one of a three-part series with Dr. Ashanti, Dr. Kwabinan Ashanti. Now, for those of you who have heard of the Willie Lynch letter, some might have thought that some white man actually wrote that, and really because that is something that some non-white person would write. So, you know, it goes without saying that that is what we all think. But we're here to tell you tonight, if you haven't heard already, that it was, in fact, written by someone in contemporary times, and it was written by a black man, an African. And you're going to understand the reason why, because certainly it did what it was set out to do, and that was to make us think, to make us focus, or to help us to focus on the behavior many of us have, the brainwashing that many of us have been, what can I say? I mean, it's been impressed upon us and placed on us, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the question is, what are we going to do about it? Well, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Keep on opening and fighting. I want to see us live together. All they want us to do is keep on killing one another. Stop right there. Stop right there. All you can do is all you can do is oh, stop right there. Okay, come here, baby. For you. How are you thinking? For you. Lord. It is a pleasant. And it runs through our lives. And the heart. Heart of
okay, and of course in the background we're listening to none other than Bob Marley. Okay, now, moving forward, let's see now, what are we going to do here? We are going to, hold on one moment, let's see. We're going to tell you a little more about what we're going to talk about tonight, and certainly that means we're going to give you a little overview of some of the dialogue that we're going to have tonight. Now, I'll put a few moments to you that we will be having Dr. Ashanti to talk with us. And I want to give you a little bit of information about him very shortly. But before we do, we want to also let you know that, again, here's a brief report on the gentrification conference, or, you know, meeting that happened today. Let me see. Well, there is, this was the third one, as indicated, and today, of course, it kind of helped to bring more strength to what is being developing with a group that is on the rise here in Philadelphia called Black Communities United. This is a national group that is coming into existence, but for here in Philadelphia, it is really focusing primarily right now on the issue of gentrification, and there is another meeting coming up in a couple of weeks that's going to go into one of the specific areas here in Philadelphia, and that's going to be happening citywide, by the way. There is also going to be at the upcoming Mumia Abdul-Jamal Celebration of Life event, is going to be a gentrification forum. At that event on April the 26th, I will be the moderator for that event, and there's going to be a panel discussion. We're going to talk about the issue of gentrification in terms of from a historical perspective. And again, this is a national, this is a nationwide thing going on. Detroit, Chicago, New Jersey, Philly. We're going to look at how it's happening, why is it happening, and, of course, what are the solutions. So with that said, we're going to tell you more about that as we move into the rest of the week. Okay, we want to also let you know that there is a Black Anti-Gentrification Summit that is coming next, preliminary work now. If you're in an area, no matter where you're located, and you want to form a committee that will help to coordinate the summit for next year, please feel free to contact us at National MWM at AOL.com. Again, National MWM at AOL.com. We're looking for local and regional coordinators to help put together the NASH Summit on Gentrification for next year. Okay, so again, if you want more information, email National MWM at AOL.com. Or you can call us at area code 267-636-3802. Okay, again, the Celebration of Life for Mumia Abdul-Jamal, I want to give you a quick rundown on that. Of course, that's going to be taking place here in Philly on April the 24th to the 26th. And if you want more information, you can certainly call Sister Pam Africa at 267-760-7344. Again, 267-760-7344. We're going to give you some more information on that event coming up as well, because there are some tickets available for the April 24th event, and then the other events, of course, on the 26th is a free event all day. You got Dead Press coming in, you got Dice Raw, and Immortal Technique, a lot of people coming in on that day to perform. So again, we're going to tell you more information about that, and we are anticipating to have some interviews with some of the people who will be at the Celebration of Life for Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Okay, one other announcement, and we're going to give you some other announcements a little later on, but for right now, we want to remind you that we're calling May the 10th Marissa Alexander Action and Awareness Day. So again, in your community, please make sure you, do something on that day. Make sure that you send an email or anything to let people know about what's going on with Marissa Alexander. Okay, so again, that's May the 10th. Now, here in Philly, we'll be doing a rally also, because we want to make sure that people know that there is a national campaign for the elimination of violence and abuse of women and girls of African descent. And so we want to begin getting that information circulated nationwide. So on that day, there will also be a rally here in Philly and in some other locations to begin getting that information matriculated as it should be. Okay, what we're going to do before we bring Dr. Asante on, we are going to, excuse me, Dr. Ashante, let me make sure I say that correctly, not Dr. Asante, Dr. Ashante, okay? But before we do, we're going to bring Sister Coco on to give you our history note for tonight. But again, in talking about Dr. Kwabinan Ashante, we're going to talk about the Willie Lynch letter. And for those of you who are not familiar with the Willie Lynch letter, well, you certainly will be tonight. It's a very interesting document to Dr. Kwabinan Ashante. We're going to also talk about his book, The Psychotechnology of Brainwashing, and why, what has happened that so many of our people today are like, you know, just, what can I say? We're all dealing with some form of mental illness, whether we want to accept that or not. But, you know, for some, it has gotten to the point of just straight up, you know, really treason, all kinds of other stuff. But we're solution-oriented here. So the question has to be, what are we going to do about it? So we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Sister Coca and hear our history moment for tonight. And then we're going to talk to Dr. Ashante. We'll be right back.
Some people got ways than me. Tell us the Bible. Yes, the plan survivor.
Survivors, but we want to do more than just survive. We want to now win some real victory. So, with that said, we're going to move on now and get ready for our live line. And with that, we're talking about Dr. Kwabinan Ashante. Okay, before we go to our live line, we are going to hear our history moment from Sister Coker. And let's see now, I think we're going to have that mic open for us in a minute. Yep, we got it. Sister Coca, do we have you here?
Yes. Praise
Very good.
God.
How are you tonight?
I'm great, thank you. And praising our Creator for this opportunity to provide information to broaden our story. Not his
yes,
story.
Yes, indeed.
Our story. And this week, our story will focus on two of the indigenous Africans born in the United States in the month of April. The first is Marvin Gaye, who transitioned before his name became unhappy. He was gay, and He left here before he became unhappy about his name being used to mean something other than what it truly is. He was born the second in 1939 in D.C. and transitioned a day before his 45th born day, April 1st, 1984, in Los Angeles. He wrote and recorded hit songs for Motown. He began as a drummer for Motown. His first big hit was Stubborn Kind of Fellow in 1962, and in 1968, I Heard It Through the Grapevine was his actually probably best known. No, not necessarily, mm-hmm. but anyway, was one of my favorites. In 1968, he recorded with several women singers such as Tammy Terrell and Mary Wells. And our second singer is Carmen McRae. That's M-C-R-A-E, McRae. She was born the 8th in 1922 in Harlem, New York, and died November 10, 1994, in Beverly Hills, California. She was internationally known for her jazz renderings. As was Sarah Vaughan, she won an amateur contest that launched her career. McRae was influenced by her lifelong friend and mentor, Billie Holiday, who was also born in April, and we'll feature her later. As well as about 15 other people that I found were also born in April, and we'll feature those too, including Mumia was also born April 24th, 1964.
Absolutely.
As stated, later on in the month, we'll hear from him. Betty Carter and Carol Sloan were influenced by Carmen. And from 1950, McRae toured the world, gaining significant popularity in Japan. Carmen won 6 Grammy nominations and the National Endowment for the Arts National Jazz Masters Fellowship Award in 1994 when she transitioned. And my favorite Carmen McRae song was Elusive Butterfly. Thank you
Wow. You're so welcome. And as you all know, we will be talking more about Mumia Abu-Jamal's Celebration of Life, which will be coming up here in Philadelphia from April the 24th through the 26th. There are people coming in from all over. So we'll give you more information about that a little later on. Thank you again, Sister Coker. And one more to add, too, Gil Scott-Heron. He's an April baby, too.
All right.
All right, sister. Thank you again.
Yeah, well, as I said,
there's
plenty of them.
I'm sorry, say it again?
I said there are plenty of them, like Tony Brown and Ella Fitzgerald. They'll also be featured throughout the month.
Okay. Wonderful. Looking forward to it.
All right.
Thank you again. Okay, family, we are going to get ready to go to our live line, and we have some really kind of interesting stuff we're going to talk about tonight. But more than just talk, we want to make sure that we help bring about some solutions. So with that said, are you all ready? Because if you're not, you better get ready. Because it's really time now to make certain that we're able to not only talk about some of the problems that we're having, but to find out what we're going to do about it, and better yet, to do it. So what we want to start doing here at New Day, which is what we've been doing, but we want to even up the ante a little, as they say, and that is to now really bring forward information with the possibility and the necessity of application. So we're going to be featuring our brothers and sisters, our elders and so forth, our professionals, et cetera, who have done some of the work that is necessary, that has been necessary, and is now ready to bring it forward for us so that we can move forward and become even more victorious. And remember to make certain that we honor our ancestors, because it is obvious we're not doing that in the best ways that we should and must. So for the next three sessions coming up for New Day, we're going to be talking about how to get rid of the Willie Lynch issue, problem, syndrome, along with post-slavery, stress, trauma, and other things. Now, we're going to be bringing on Dr. Ashanti very shortly, but I want all of you to get ready because you're going to get a little IQ test tonight as well, because all of this is really important to understand what has happened to us, which many of you, of course, do have some understanding of that, needless to say, because those who tune into this program, y'all already know. But the bottom line is, we always have new people calling in or listening in, and we want to make sure that we can continue to edify on all levels. So we're going to do that tonight. Now, again, we're going to talk to Dr. Pavinan Ashanti, who is not only the author of 10 books, who is a retired professor of psychology, but is also an Ashanti chief. Now, I find that extremely interesting and wonderful, actually, because, you know, it's very difficult to find, shall we say, a multifaceted kind of person in this day and age, meaning to be really kind of skilled in not just one area, but two, three, four. I mean, in this day and age, we talk about being holistic, but what does that mean? So we have to now focus on the fact that if you accomplish one thing really well, that's fine, that's wonderful. But, folks, we're in the 21st century. I dare say we better be able to do more than one thing or two things or three things really, really well. And as we say in the hood, you got to know how to walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. Well, in meeting our elder, our brother, I really felt, you know, very, very good about that because, again, we have someone who is well-versed in the field, in the area of psychology. And as I said earlier, we sick, okay, but not so much that we can't be helped or that we can't make this stuff straighten out, be straightened out, and that's what we're going to do. So, again, to be well-versed in that area of psychology from an African perspective, by the way, that's the other part of this that I have to mention, that oftentimes you find folks that are trained in certain areas, but the European indoctrination has sunk in so well that they really become a liability as opposed to an asset. And so in this case, we don't have that problem. We're talking about someone who is well-versed in that field based on what they're talking about, but knows how to flip it and make sure that we can get what we need from it. The other area, of course, is from a traditional standpoint, to be able to comprehend and understand our culture, some of our traditions are well intact, that has a historical perspective that has been proven, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's a wonderful thing. And this is what we've got to begin to not only strive more for, but to make certain that those who have achieved this and obtained it, we've got to make certain we provide greater support, greater connectivity, and so forth. So without further ado, we're going to go to our live line and welcome to our extended family New Day here. We are so honored and proud to present to you all, and again, this is only part one. Got two, three coming, so get ready because it's going to be powerful. But at any rate, we are now going to introduce you to Dr. Pavinan Ashanti, who, by the way, is also the author of the Willie Lynch letter, and then some, okay? So you're going to hear about all of that tonight. And as we continue with the programming, we're going to get more into his book and dealing with brainwashing and what we can do about it to become unbrainwashed. So you all get ready because we want to hear your comments and questions very, very shortly. But first, we're going to let our brother, our elder, tell you something about himself, and then we're going to move on with this dialogue. Dr. Ashanti, do we have you on this line?
Yes, you do.
Wonderful. Oh, okay. You have me concerned there for a minute.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
All right. We're good now.
I said, Nima mo machi, Nima mo waho, Nima mo akwaba. I spoke first in my Ashanti language of Twi. I said, good evening and welcome to all of my friends.
Oh, akwaba. And Madasi
Ba. And I'm born and raised in North Carolina, and my family has been here since 1857.
All right. Wow.
So
okay.
I'm no different from any other typical African American. I am African American. So because of my name and my research, a lot of people sometimes think that I'm from Ghana, West Africa. That's my, I hold dual citizenship there, but I'm from the United States of America. I have a bachelor's degree from North Carolina Central University in Durham, North Carolina. I have a master's degree jointly from the University of North Carolina and North Carolina Central University in sociology, and I have a doctorate degree. I started out at Harvard University, and then I transferred and went to the University of Pittsburgh, where I received my PhD in counseling psychology, specializing in African people, and in 1974. And from there, I became a member of the Association of Black Psychologists. I returned to North Carolina Central University in 1974 to do research and teach at North Carolina Central University. I forgot to say, prior to all of this education after my bachelor's, I was drafted in the military, and I was a combat soldier in Vietnam. Infantry. I was what you call a grunt, the lowest of the lowest. And I do have symptoms of PTSD. And as a psychologist, I work with veterans who also have PTSD. And matter of fact, tomorrow I will be doing a show on the behind-the-scenes story of PTSD. Now, today my first cousin asked me, he said, where did you learn all the stuff you learned? How did you get that way? Because he asked me that because in my family, I'm the only one like this. My family is not like me, but they see me and they scratch their head. I'm from a little small country town initially called Chapin, North Carolina. It's in eastern North Carolina, and it's about 30 miles from Myrtle Beach. Total population, 3,000 people, 1,000 Indians, 1,000 blacks, 1,000 white people. So that's where I started out. And I told him I really don't know. I say because I think it's circumstances. I say because I really didn't seek all of this. It looked like I was an athlete, so I got to travel a little bit when I was in college. I was a track athlete. And I began to see outside of my town for the first time as I began to travel. And one thing would lead to another. Then when I went to Vietnam, I didn't want to go. But I was I was afraid to be locked up in prison. So I went. And over there, I began to find leases on the ground that says, black man, go home. We are not your enemy. And when I saw that, it touched me, but I knew they also were trying to kill me. So I did not let that go to my head, but I was fighting for rights of people that we didn't have our own self here in America. So I promised then that if I live through this and I go home, I would never, ever be defined by white supremacy or anything else. I would define myself. And that's when I got on a quest on my own, going to seminars, reading books, one thing after another, and I kept meeting people, stumbling onto things, and gradually I was able to accumulate a lot of knowledge. I didn't learn any of this in school. They didn't teach it.
That's
like,
right.
Even to this day, most of us, even if we get a PhD degree in black studies, you will not learn what we are talking about tonight. They don't teach it.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that certainly answered a few questions that I had in my mind. I wanted to know what motivated you, and you definitely made that clear. So, wow. Okay. Before we move on, because there's so many areas that we are going to talk about and cover, I know one of the things that many people have been asking and will be asking, and that is, what inspired you to write the Willie Lynch piece?
Well, in 1976, 2 years after I had gotten my doctorate degree, I was teaching at North Carolina Central University. And there were about seven of us young professors who had just come there. And it was in the heart of the Civil Rights Movement. Durham, quite frankly, Durham, North Carolina is the home of North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. It's the home of the Farmers and Mechanics Bank. It was the location, it's only 50 miles from A&T Greensboro, where the sit-ins started. But all the money was laundered for the Civil Rights Movement was laundered to Durham, North Carolina. As a boy going to high school, I routinely, all any time, would see Martin Luther King, I would see Malcolm X, I would see Jesse Jackson, all the great civil rights leaders, they constantly were coming through town, and we would see them. And they were coming and getting bail money and going back all across the United States bailing people out of prison. So this was the setting of Durham, North Carolina. So we wanted to make our contributions. So what we did, we set up a study group of people. There were about 15 of us to start out with. And we would meet in Student Union Building, I think it was on Wednesday night at 7 p.m., and we'd go for about 3 hours. And we would talk in there, be teaching ourselves and discussing black issues and so forth in the Civil Rights Movement. And there was no black-owned bookstore in Durham at that time. But from our little group, a bookstore spun out of it. A guy named Bruce Bridges, he was in the group, and he spun out, and he started the first black-owned bookstore in North Carolina. And that's where we began to, through him, begin to order more books for us to read and look at. Well, one of the books I came across was The Black Jacobins. That's a classic book.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is about slavery in Haiti in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to learn a lot about it. And in reading that book, I came across two things that grossly affected me. And that was the harsh brutality unimaginable that occurred by the French against the Haitian people. I learned who these Haitian people were from, what country they came from. They came from Mali, Ghana, Togo, Benin, even the Congo. It was a mixture of people, and they all brought with them their own religion. However, one religion in particular stood out, and that was the religion of voodoo. And that was my first exposure, formal exposure, to want to know about voodoo. And this great voodoo priest named Bookman, who was the leader of the revolution in Haiti. So I was picking up all kinds of ideas. I had been reading some other slave books in the United States, too, but they were mild in compared to the Black Jacobin. So I decided that I wanted to see if I couldn't speed up things here in Durham. So I want to sort of create some just community disturbance or race riot, so to speak. Durham, blacks in Durham are about 45% of the population. And then they had means. And we weren't particular about integrating, quite frankly, because what we had the best of separate but equal, okay? For example, our school, we couldn't get a whole lot of different jobs, so our teachers had master's degrees, where the white schools, teachers only had bachelor's degrees, and there's a wife of students who were working on the other degrees at Duke University. Our schools were better. So in any event, I decided to write a fictitious letter that would tell the story of how we were brainwashed. And I pulled together information from the Black Jacobins, from other slave books I had read, and I, quite frankly, I even made up some. And I decided to give it a name. And the name I gave it was the Willie Lynch Letter. Well, think of the times. Willie is a common name that we used to call black people. Hey, Willie. Okay.
Right.
And there's a town about 6-8 miles from Durham. And the name of that town is Lynchburg, Virginia. So what did they do? I wanted this person to tell people how to lynch people. So I gave them the Willie Lynch Letter. Then I laid down the rules of how he was given instructions to the other slave owners to not be so brutal to the African slaves and stop killing them, because he had a better method to preserve their lives as a slave, because that meant a whole lot of money. So he had a better method for doing this. So I had him coming from the Caribbean. Now, I didn't know, quite frankly, they even had white people in the Caribbean. I was not a historian. But I was heavily influenced by Haiti, and that's why I had him from the Caribbean. I had him coming up the James River, which is located in Richmond, Virginia, north of Lynchburg, okay? And I had him come through that because Richmond, Virginia is the first place the first 19 African slaves to the United States came through. They were from Ghana, and they were from the Congo, and Zimbabwe, and just recently, 2 years ago, I was honored to be called up to Richmond, Virginia, to observe Juneteenth.
Right.
And they had invited the ambassadors from Ghana, the Congo, Zimbabwe, and myself there to be the priest to exhume, if you will, the spirits of our African ancestors and send them back home to Africa. And that's a real powerful experience. But the bottom line was, when I wrote this letter, one of the things that a lot of people miss for some reason, it's clearly there, but I don't know what they don't talk about so much. I made it focus in particular on brainwashing the black female. Why would I pick the black female instead of the male? Well, being a psychologist, I knew that most of the average child spends the first 13 years with his or her mother. The mother itself is the one passed on the information, while the father normally is out working to provide food and stuff and safety for the family. But the education normally comes from the mother. So I figure if they focus on the female, they would brainwash the mother, and then the rest would fall in. Now,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
when I began, and then I said things like put the light skin against the dark skin, put the old against the young, all of these are mm-hmm. opposite to create vision, okay? But nowhere did I ever say how you do that. People forget that when they read that letter. I just talk about what to do, but I didn't say, I didn't explain how to do it because right then I didn't know myself. Okay? So that's what I put out, and I made it front side and back side. And then after typing it up, then I got an old hand crank copy thing, and I ran off 500 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want nobody to know that I wrote that and distributed it. So what I did was at 12 o'clock midnight one night, I got it in my car, and I had had a few beers, and I just rode around town to key locations, and I dropped these things off where people would pick them up and see them. And when they read them, I just knew they would get angry and mad as hell. After I figured it would start about 3 days after I had put it out. Well, nothing happened in 3 days. Nothing happened in 1 week. Nothing happened in 2 weeks. Nothing happened in 3 weeks. So I think I had completely failed. I said, well, okay, that didn't work. I tried. Forget about it. Until about 15 or 17 years later, I was in Washington, D.C. at the Million Man March. I never forget.
Mm-hmm.
And riding up on that bus from Durham, North Carolina, on that bus, I was with a friend of mine from Nigeria. And I came face to face with my past and PTSD. I never knew it before.
Mm-hmm.
As I was riding on that bus, I thought about it. I said, we're really taking a chance here because all these buses are going. I said, these white supremacists can get in these woods and shoot these buses and kill all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that. And then I became hyper-vigilant. I began to become very looking and all that kind of stuff because it's a real potential
mm-hmm.
danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we started, and then not only that, though, I heard a little voice in me says, my God, I did not know I was a killer. And it kind of scared me, quite frankly, because it says, yes, I can take a life in defense of my freedom, even though these people didn't do nothing to me, just like I did in Vietnam. I didn't know them over there either, but I was over there fighting. I can
mm-hmm,
do it here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when I finally got to Washington, D.C., we parked and we walked over. And when we got near, it was early in the morning. Now, this is about 7 a.m., about 7 o'clock in the morning, coming from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, I saw so many people. I said, my God, I had never seen that many black men in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept
mm-hmm.
going. But I was a little surprised because there were some black women out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, white people were walking out there just like they owned in their own place, like they weren't even afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That was a strange sight. And whenever we sat down on the ground and all that stuff, but whenever a sister was coming through, we had a sister coming
mm-hmm.
through, the place was split like clear past, and where they wouldn't even know about brushing. They would be treated like queens. I had never seen
mm-hmm.
anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then
mm-hmm.
finally Farrakhan got up to speak. And when he
mm-hmm.
spoke, he said, let me tell you about something here called the Willie Lynch letter. And when he said that, I looked up, and I said, that sounds kind of familiar. Next thing, he started reading. And I say, my God, where did he get that from? How did he get that? And that's when later I realized, like, anything you put out, a leaf or anything, there are people traveling through your town, and somebody might pick one up, carry it somewhere else and all. And that's what happened with it. People start adding to it over the years. And next thing I know, you had psychiatrists and psychologists and black historians talking about the Willie Lynch syndrome, all of that stuff. And it was a total lie, but it was based on real truth. And I wasn't about to come out and admit that I did it because I figured the people would damn near kill me. The black people would have been so bad with me. So I didn't say nothing. I just kept my mouth shut. But out there, though, by then I had written how to do this stuff and how to undo the Willie Lynch stuff. And that book was called The Psychotechnology of Brainwashing, Healing the Repairing the Minds of Our Ancestor Enslavement. And that book is to be out in another 3 weeks. It'll be out for good for the first time in about 12 years. So, but anyway, that is the story in a nutshell, partly of the Willie Lynch. So let me tell you the other part real quick. People began to recognize that I was using language that wasn't available back in the slavery days, and that I couldn't spell too well and didn't know all my history. That's what some of the top researchers found. And they were trying to track this down. And the closer they ever came to it was, a librarian at the University of Missouri, I think it was, said that the letter was brought to her, and they told her to keep it a secret and don't say where they got it from. But it was still my letter, but she didn't know but she know how she got it, but she don't know where they got it from. So in the final analysis, I recognize that people were talking about this post-traumatic slave syndrome, all kinds of things. And pretty soon I got a little tired of it. I started meeting people calling the talk shows, saying, I read the Willie Lynch letter, this is what happened, this is what. And they act like that's made them stop reading, like they knew everything just based on that one letter. So I said, well, the hell with it. So I told a friend of mine, a friend of mine who writes a blog newspaper, a blog newsletter, and that we was in a coffee house one day. I said, man, let me tell you something. He said, what? I said, you heard of the Willie Lynch? He said, yeah, sure, yeah, I know about that. I said, you do? He said, yeah. I said, well, I wrote it. And he stopped. He said, and he kept on talking. And then he said, "What did you say?" I said, "I'm the one who wrote the letter." He said, "You kidding?" I said, "No." Then I say, "Don't reveal this until I give you permission." And about a year went by. Okay, because I was going to put this in my new book, and it is in the new book, by the way. But about a year passed, and I was in Cincinnati. And I was online doing something. And what popped up was a picture of myself and say, Willie Lynch, writer found. And I said, oh, hell, that's me. And I had told him to go and release it, but I didn't know when it was going to release. And that's how I found out about it. Then on my own, I called a guy, Manu Ampim, who writes stuff on black history, too, in Oakland, California. Mm-hmm. I called and I said, I got a present for you. He said, what? I said, I'm the writer of the Willie Lynch letter, and I saw your description, most likely the type of person who did it. And I said, I was so impressed with it, I decided to come out and tell you I'm the one. And then he began to ask me all kind of questions. I said, but don't write it, don't say nothing about it until you got permission. Well, I thought a lot of, I never met him, but I thought a lot of his work and so forth. Next thing I know, stuff are running around on Facebook about this fake Willie Lynch letter and about me and how he used his detective skills to flush me out and force me to confess. That's when I realized that he is no different from most so-called black people scholars who are trying to use somebody else to make fame
mm-hmm.
for themselves. I'm also respectful
right.
of Dickie. So now I'm telling this because in his book, you'll see that where he made me do this. But anybody who knows me know you don't make me do nothing.
No, that's right.
So that's wow. the general gist of the Willie Lynch letter. But I did find out though, when several good things did come out about that letter much later. I didn't know that. It was
mm-hmm.
the precursor to starting African American studies in many ways
mm-hmm.
on different college campuses. And they were using my letter among the student population as part of their argument to get it. So it had a big effect, and it even infected over in the mental health itself, because now we have black mental health professionals now recognizing that the impact of enslavement in the past is still alive with us today. And in 1969, anybody could go on the internet right now and look at slave apologies. The slave
mm-hmm.
apology. There you will see where the United States Congress itself, Senate and the House of Representatives made apology itself after about 11 states had done it previously every 30 days. Now, I got very suspicious when they start doing it every 30 days, like clockwork starting
mm-hmm.
in England, okay? They
mm-hmm.
were setting the stage for a black president because he was my
mm-hmm.
president. And so they came out and apologized, and the language they used in it is the spitting definition of brainwashing itself without them saying it. And I thought, again, like this letter that the lawyers and everybody get pissed off about it. They didn't. And there still has not been a single conference on taking up the Congress who said they would make money available for training programs, if you will, to deal with the lingering, meaning right now, consequences of ancestor enslavement. That's where I come in. That's where the talk show come in now, right now. Let me give you an example. I did some research here, and it blew my mind. This is the research here. It says, let's look at starting where this lingering ancestral stuff came about. African-American people have been the recipients of the psychotechnology of brainwashing in the following periods: the economic prisoner period, which we call slavery, the economic prison, that's what we were, which they called enslavement, for 400 years, the reconstruction period after slavery, 12 years, Jim Crow victims, 77 years, the civil rights movement, 16 years, and the continuing, what I call verificating educational system, 56 years. And we have not had one single second. That's a total of 561 years without one single second of PTS training for slavery, not one second. Now, you wouldn't think about sending nobody, any soldier, to any war without bringing them home and giving them PTSD training. Now, here they are, apologizing for something, knowing what they did, know what the problems are to this day. They know why schools are like it is. They know why crime is like it is. They know all of this. I'm telling you what I know. They do know because they caused it and they made it. They know how they did it, and I tracked them down to see how, okay? Now, but all these liberals have not bothered to tell their black friends or lackeys that that's the cause of it, but they did say the lingering consequence. They recognize they're still here. If they recognize they're still here, then where the training program? Why haven't we asked for any? You see?
Mm-hmm.
So now,
mm-hmm.
when you look at that, you realize how intelligent and how powerful intellectually and physically African Americans or black people are. We've been able to do all these things we've done now with no help and assistance at all.
Mm-hmm.
Training
wow.
we have gotten, the exposure we have gotten, has come from shows like yours on our own here and there, workshops here and there, and as a result, it has made us aware of some of these things. But I'm going to tell you, if you look at any successful school system or successful school period in the whole United States and what educational model or what theory was used to do it, it's Afrocentricity. And mm-hmm. it's only one they have documented evidence to show the proof of it. Yet,
yeah.
Al Sharpton, the whole crew, none of them have endorsed it, and they have not put it in the schools. Now, here is Obama coming in here now with the so-called Black Nail Initiative. There's something that we've been doing out here on our own anyway for the longest,
that's
but he's
right.
finally making some
that's
money for it, okay?
Right.
And it will not dress a single need. They could do everything they say they're going to do. They can try, and I will tell you, it will not work because
that's
I
right.
have 13 years of experience in this, and I know it won't work. It would, mm-hmm. but what it will do to be successful, it would teach them how to adjust to oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be very successful in adjusting to oppression, but never change the system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Dr. Shante, I just want to say, and then certainly I want you to continue, because I'm sitting here looking at a conference or a session that took place here in Philadelphia today, and it was called Breaking the Silence on Mental Wellness. Now, this is probably like the fourth or fifth year that this has happened, and it was developed by a state representative, or is he a senator? He's a senator named Vincent Hughes, very well known here in Philadelphia in the black community. Now, the interesting thing about this particular session was that
I forgot, what is his name?
Senator Vincent Hughes.
Very
he had this annual almost, I mean, every other year or so or whatever, but it's been for several years they have it. He is interesting what they're doing or have done. It was yesterday and today. And just so you all know, family, to show you better how this is all being orchestrated and what's getting ready to happen in the near future. Now, of course, this is a so-called black elected official. And the focal point was, breaking the silence of violence and abuse, really, but under the umbrella of mental wellness. Now, this was co-sponsored by Temple University, by the way. By Temple University, and Drexel University was a part of it. And they focused a lot on, I'll give folks some insight into some of the sessions that they held, because, I mean, it's vast. When you get a chance, Dr. Shante, I want you to check out the website, because what we want to do at some point in the near future is have our own kind of symposium or whatever, weekend something, that will really focus on what we need to do, how we need to do it, but understanding where it all came from. How did some of this stuff happen? See, with the Million Women Movement, one of the things in our direct action plan is within the next 5 years to do a research piece. And ours is specifically dealing with women and girls. But we want to look at violence and abuse of our women and girls, but we want to understand from whence it comes, the effects, and, of course, the solution. So we'll go more into that later. But, again, going back to the breaking the silence, this thing had every type of so-called professional in the mental health field, talking primarily about African people, by the way, or African Americans, but it had the Jewish people, it had as presenters, it had, all kinds of the Asian people, et cetera, all talking about how they, you know, these various things that they're talking about could help our people deal with mental illness. So I just want to put it out there to you, and I'll send you the website if you don't, if you can't pull it up.
I would appreciate
but again,
that.
Okay, you got it. You got it. And it's dealing with behavioral health issues take a tremendous toll on our community due to associated stigma, the strong tendency to remain silent when confronted with behavior health concerns, the misunderstanding of the nature of the illness. Now, that's funny. The misunderstanding of the nature of the illness, and the lack of clarity about how to identify and access available appropriate services and resources.
I will. Let me say this. It's going to sound funny, but it's to be. But if you think about it, it's to be inspected. Okay. I don't know. I know probably maybe five first line researchers and maybe about 25 of their students in the whole United States that even know how to do or what to do. Most of the top black researchers we have are brainwashed themselves. And you can tell right away. It's easy. I asked you on purpose, what was this guy's name? And he is practicing white supremacy himself and not aware of it. His name is white. What does that have to do with anything? All independent people in the United States wear the name of their own race. The lingering consequences, I don't care what, how good our intentions are, including Martin Luther King, were white supremacy, because that was the state of our knowledge at that time. Okay, but although they did good work, but if anybody says they want to run an African Rights of Passage program, or an African Rights and Passage school, or anything, the first thing I look at is their mind. And how I look at that is what do they answer to. If they're answering to a white name, then I know I can't get very far with them because they have not applied it to themselves. This is very, very simple knowledge for me, simply because I studied so long, okay? But It is so deep that the biggest practitioners of white supremacy in the United States now are black American people themselves. And the primary leaders of it and the reinforcers of it, Christian preachers, including Reverend T.D. Jakes, all of them. I don't eliminate any of them. I don't care what good work they're doing. If they violate the principles of power, then they're not qualified to teach. Now, I don't have to take cocaine to know the dangers of cocaine. Okay? But
yes.
I can go and learn how to do it. But we're healing the lingering consequences of ancestor enslavement. Okay? We talking about post-traumatic slave syndrome as though you don't have it yourself or we don't have it myself. That's foolish because I have identified at least 30 areas of black culture that are indicative of any race that should be able to do. For example, if I cannot speak my own tongue, regardless of whatever the reason is. If I can't speak my language, that means I'm brainwashed. Okay? If I'm dyeing my hair blonde,
woo,
with red, blue eyes and all of that, when nobody's making us do that, nobody's making us do that. We do that ourselves because we think that is prettier and it would give us more opportunities. And white people themselves scratching their heads say, why are these people doing it? They talk to me. You should hear the things white people tell me. Because, number one, they think I'm from Africa. So they talk to me as an African. And when they talk to me as an African, they feel safe to criticize the black American and say, but you're not like them, so you're different. Let's take, for example, very recently, one guy from upstate New York applied to 10 Ivy League schools, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, he applied to 10 of them. He got accepted in all 10. He was a first-generation African-American from Ghana with an African name. He knew his own African culture plus white culture. And as a result, he did something that has never been done in the history of America. There was another one at Johns Hopkins University who made the highest academic score made in the history of Johns Hopkins. He was from Baltimore, from a ghetto area. He came up, he said, well, they were making fun out of where he lived. Do you live in trees? Booty scratch. Oh, didn't do that. But he had his base in his own culture that protected him. You see, so there are huge advantages, selfish advantages, and rewards for knowing your own culture in addition to white culture. I'm not telling anybody to give up white culture. No, you should know that because they know I was. Matter of fact, if you go to Africa, you see white people who are racist over here going to Africa becoming an African, wearing African clothes, dancing, studying everything, especially the religion. But over here, you can't get black people to want to go to Africa because their reality is Tarzan and Dick and Jane instead of just simply going to the Internet on YouTube and put Africa you don't see on television. And if you see that, my research is saying it blows our mind. They cannot conceive. They say, is that Africa? I said, I thought that was New York. I thought that was San Francisco. They have no clue. But it can be changed. That's the point I'm making. We have the technology now to do what I call regional pilot studies. Let's say about $40 million we'll have the training to take care of about 10,000 people in 6 states, where you train the trainers and then put them through the training, put the people through a training process that lasts on average about 8 months. And I guarantee you, for those who complete the program, you will see dramatic drops and changes, not only creating more business, but learning how to create own jobs and all these rewards. They know this, but they won't give us the money. So, but your effort to do this with the women, that's a godsend. Because you remember what I said? The females are the ones who impart these values into their children. Mm-hmm. Once a mother has been reprogrammed, she cannot produce another brainwashed child. It's impossible.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So
just,
the women.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you are. I mean, I'm so glad you said that because I'm hoping that as we proceed with our programs here at New Day, as well as our community-type programs, that people begin to really understand and overstand more about what the Man Woman Movement is really about. Because, I mean, I've heard so many things, and I'm going to say this in terms of brothers, in terms of black men, who were so confused, and some intentionally so, rather than to try to accept that as women, women need to help women and girls to get through some of this process. And so rather than to see that as being valid, as being necessary and so forth, I've had too many males to want to make it seem as if, oh, or you're trying to be separate from us, or you're trying to be a feminist, or, you know. And with that, not even understanding or looking at the reality of a woman can't raise a man beyond a certain point. What makes you think you can raise a woman or a female? So the work that we have to do as women is very clear, and we need the help and support of our entire family. So with this dialogue, we are, I'm sure, helping to make it clearer what our position is, what our intentions are, because it is to address some serious concern issues. Men cannot do what the women must now do with these young girls. And so, you know, again, it's so important that we're having this dialogue, and I thank you so much, because, you know, with me saying it is one thing, and as you said, our people are brainwashed. They have to hear the word doctor or, you know, or something else, reverend or something else, before the light bulb goes off and they want to hear something or understand something. And so we understand that and realize it, so, okay, we'll go on with the program. But for real, again, I'm glad you also made it very clear that what you know, really know, you didn't learn in no book. And that's not to dismiss, of course, formal education, but people need to be real clear that Harriet Tubman didn't have a degree. Yeah, Asantewaa didn't have a degree. Hetchiput didn't have a degree, y'all. So what part of this do you not get? Okay, I'm done.
You know, I look forward to working with you any way I can to help design. Well, first of all, I have the data. I have 30 years worth of live data on before and after, okay? I have it, and I got it because I was hoping one day it would be submitted to court if necessary to prove the damage for reparations, okay? But I realized that physical reparation is one thing, but mental reparations, that has to come from us, the victim. Only we can do that. You cannot trust the people to heal you who kill you. That's impossible. But with mental reparations, we then can focus heavy on the physical reparation, but that comes first.
Right.
And any male who has the nerve to ever say what they said to you about you trying to separate your calls from them and all that, ask them, do they have anybody they can put up that's a male that has done the rehabilitation work of Harriet Tubman, a woman.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, this, hopefully, one of these lectures, we'll get a chance to really give some pointers out to mothers, whether they're married or whether they're single, in child raising.
Mm-hmm.
To become highly successful, because if we don't know how to do that, right, we can at least point out where you can go and find different pieces of it and put it together, okay? You
could
go to a workshop. You can listen to a radio program. You can go another place for dance. You can go another place for African religion. You can put it together.
Mm-hmm.
But the reward is unbelievable. I have never been so free and happy in my life. I'm now 17 years old, but I started out when I was 32. And I can tell you, one of the blessings I have received, did not seek, wouldn't know how to seek it, was to be in school as a king in Ghana among the Shanti Nation. And I'm taking a group of people now to Ghana July the 21st. I can take up to 15 people, and I will take them there to get an experience like they've never seen before. Not only to Ghana, but we'll go to Togo and to Benin, the home of the Blue Relief. And they will have experience that when they come back here, it won't be like people who just happen to go to Africa for tourism, like you see the women of the housewives of Atlanta going to South Africa. No, you will be going there, and you will come back anew. And I highly encourage anybody who wants that further training, call your show, let you know, and we'll hook it up.
Absolutely. And family, that's what we're talking about. What you're going to hear us do in this year is to begin to really develop our extended family nationwide so that we have in place the type of support system services, whatever you want to call them, to make certain that our people's needs can be met and not be met where it's going to cost them $1 trillion. That's the other thing. We have a lot of people running around now. I mean, their prices are just insane, to say the least. Well, insane, to say the least. So we are working now to make certain that we can service our people in the spirit and in the way that it's supposed to be, and not with the grants and not with the corporate sponsoring. That's how you're going to be able to tell who is who. The lines are drawn in the sand. When you see people striving to be independent, to be free, you're going to know the difference between this and that and this and that. And that's what we're going to make certain you're able to see. So as Dr. Shanti just mentioned, as we proceed, we will develop a network nationwide. I'm going to be going to North Carolina soon to be able to sit with him directly. As many of you have heard me say, I appreciate my elders. And as such, when I know that they are there, oh, I'm going. I'm going to connect because I have to grow and develop as we all do. I'm just extremely selective, as we all should be, for real. But the point being, we're going to make this happen. This elder, this brother, this doctor is bona fide and qualified in many areas, and I'm not saying that, you know, because I'm about trying to patronize anybody. But the point and the fact is, as you all know, I had the opportunity to go to Benin. I know connecting with people have a spiritual reality when you're in tune that way. My brother, Shango Wande, is now on a Kofu. So it is not coincidental that we are having these dialogues and these conversations and connecting the dots so that we can heal holistically, meaning physically, mentally, spiritually. And lastly, and then we're going to go to our callers, you will hear us talk in the very near future. We're in the developmental stage of this. But Dr. Shanti will be taking a trip to Ghana and Togo and Benin in June, and we're going to give you more information about that. This is also a prelude for a session that will be coming in the future for those who are already healers, practitioners, or want to be. There's going to be a special session so that you can learn and train with some of the masters. And we'll be giving you more information about that very soon. But for right now, Dr. Shanti, are you ready for a few callers?
Oh, yes. I would love to. I'm sorry I had to talk so long for the people.
Oh, no. Listen, my boards are lit up. They're here. They're waiting. So, family, we're going to take some questions now. And remember, this is just part one. So we have a lot more to cover. We haven't even gotten into the books yet, which is going to help dismantle the Willie Lynch chip, as many of you call it, okay, because we do have it. I mean, it is there, and you all know it. Envy, jealousy, suspicions, you know, untrust. Well, some of that is justified, by the way. But I'm saying, you know, you all know, we acting really foolishly. And so how are we going to address some of this stuff? Anyway, if you have a question or comment, please push one now. And we're going to get into this. And we're going to do so for the next two segments for our shows as well, which means we're going to be doing some special editions this week. Tell you more about that as well. But if you have a question or comment, please feel free to push one now. And we're going to go to caller. Hold on 1 minute. Okay, wait. Something's going on with my boards. See, I tell you, my boards are jammed up. So bear with me. Oh, Iya, Ajua, you know what? I want you to hang up and call right back because somehow my board is for some reason locked or stuck or something like that. I need you to hang up and call right back. I see you here, but I can't access you. So, Ia Ajua, please hang up and call back. In the meantime, we're going to go to 7940. We're going to try to open up your mic. Something's really crazy. Okay, we got you. Okay, 7940,
yes,
your mic should be open.
Greetings.
Go ahead, sister. Greetings to you.
Greetings, Empress. And I would like to thank, what is the brother's name again?
His name is Dr. Ashanti.
Okay, Brother Ashanti, I would like to thank you for your book. I haven't read it yet, but I would love to purchase it. And
right.
One of the things I heard you say, that we have been brainwashed, and by us being brainwashed, I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you wrote that book to deprogram your people to know that we've been had it. We got to reprogram ourselves, because this, if you look at the system in place, this system is only to keep us, Father, to be enslaved by these European individuals. And I also know they use the technique enslave our people and make them like the house niggas, so they can use them to control us, and they, as if they are our leaders when they are not. They just put in place to help keep us enslaved. So I really appreciate your book. But I would like to know, is it possible that you and can get on our APAC conference call very soon when you are available? I'm looking that up through Empress, because we would like to share some information with our organization, but we need somebody like yourself, and we've been looking for a African-descended conscious a psychologist, so we can let him or she know what we are dealing with, and we need some type of holistic healing. So I would like to know if those things are possible. It's very possible, and I would make it my top priority to be able to work with this. I'm a healer also, okay? But this is part of my job of my work, and I'm officially retired from working on the plantation, but this is my calling. This is what I do, and I love to do this, and I would love to help you in the way I could. Yes, and I would like for Empress to share with you about our organization, and then she'll get back to me and let me know what would be good for you to come on our APAC call. But we have one this Tuesday, and we would love if you can come on, but I'll let you and Empress connect up, and then I'll let her get back to me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go now. I got my sister Iya. I got you right here, sis, 1613. We're getting ready to open up your mic right about now. We got Dr. Iya Ajua with us. Hey, Mahotep.
Mahotep, sis, as usual, bringing the fire, the information.
Yes.
Hotep, Dr. Kwabena Ashanti, wow, this is so powerful. Yes, to speak with you. I want to share with you some experience I had with you have the IQ, the brainwashing IQ test, right?
Brainwashing test, yes.
And I was formerly at a school, and it was identifying itself as being African-centered. And I was sharing this. That's why Empress T is laughing, because I was sharing this with her earlier. And what happened was we gave the test to the teachers, to everybody, to all of the adults at the school, and none of them, I mean, it was really sad. They could not even get like a 20% on the test. It was really bad. It was very, very bad. And they did not know any of the African story. And the school was identifying itself as being African-centered. Now, Yeah, and if you don't know any of the African story, how are you going to speak about the contributions of African people in a particular subject area that you are teaching? And so the inundation of European knowledge is so ingrained, like you said, you know, it's very, very true. It's so ingrained. It's sad. It's sad. And this is why, you know, our children remain in the African population pretty much worldwide, because this is not something only that's happening in the U.S. I was just tweeting about you, too, on Twitter. And this is not just something that's happening only in the U.S. This madness is worldwide, you know. And that's why, you know, like Nigerians will come here and they'll say, continental Africans, Africans from the Caribbean, they'll come here and they'll say, you know, they think that we all use bleaching cream. And not to say that some of us don't, you know, some of us do. But I think it's more prominent in some with amongst our continental family than here, you know, because I had that experience as well. I was in Ghana, went to the store, we got a magazine, and we looked in the magazine, and all of the women were two-toned. Their faces and neck were light. And then their arms were their natural color. It really looked strange to us because, you know, we had never seen anything like that. And then I have a question as well. Again, I want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing, because, like the sister just went off said, we need you. We need you. Like, we really need your work. It's very, very important, essential that you continue doing the work that you're doing, because we need to use it to release ourselves mentally from this, you know, European stranglehold that continues to lock up our minds. But my question is, the you mentioned about T.D. Jakes and all the other faith-based people who are conditioned. Would you also say that that's true for some of the so-called popular scholars who identify themselves as African-centered, but they're not, and they are making money and building institutes and have the whole array of, you know, products and books that they're selling?
I would definitely say so, no question about it, because you as an African-centered scholar yourself, you know how easy it is to identify an African-centered person. It's easy. But what these people do, they cherry pick and pick out those things that they feel safe with and won't get them in trouble. Many of them, quite frankly, are COINTELPRO themselves, professionals doing it. They have, in fact, infiltrated every movement we've ever had in the United States, including the present Afrocentric movement. And so many, and I know them, they know me, but they prefer not to, most of them try to avoid me in particular, but I am not against the United States at all.
Right.
I'm not against white culture at all. I'm not against anything, but I also say our problem, the major problem is the fact that we are multicultural. That's our problem. We know everybody's culture except our own. So we have to first learn our own, and that will make our knowledge of the white culture even stronger. So I'm not against any white people. A damn fool, quite frankly, if they didn't do what they did, they would lose control of all their power here, because with us being brainwashed now, look how much progress we have made without no help. Imagine them stop doing it, and before you know it, you will have a real African in the White House.
Right? That is true. Wow. Yes, indeed. Woo! That is very true. You said a real African in the White House. Wow.
That's correct. We don't have one now. We have one who looks like an African.
Right.
But his culture, his practice, even his love of black women is quite oriented.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is powerful. That is powerful. That is powerful. And so
I have never seen Michelle Obama wear an African dress the whole time she's been in the White House. Imagine what she could do to the economy of African world. I see her wearing Indian dresses, Chinese dresses. Oh, never. I seen her hair change from the time she came in to now it wind blows and shakes all over the place, bought in India.
Wow.
What kind of role model is this?
It's very painful
to talk about this and to present the data, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is the name of the, you said something about a book of Korean African Cells from Enslavement. What's the title of your latest book that you have coming out?
The Psychotechnology of Brainwashing, Healing the Lingering Consequences of Ancestor Enslavement.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Ah, we need that. Yes. Wow.
And I take pride that this is not a book of theory. This is based on 30 years of real practice. I've worked with at least over 3,000 people, okay? Some of my listeners to the show right now, I really wish some... Anyone who's gone through my training, I hope you can call, but I would like for you to see. There are people, by the way, even in the Afrocentric movement, who have the, if you will, the show business quality. If they didn't create it, if they're not getting the credit, they also will boycott you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
How well we know.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We know that every day.
The bottom line is we have everything we need, right? All we need now is to formulate these various groups of the willing. Those who are willing, we will train a small body of trainers, and we will then go down the road. We don't need everybody aboard because we might have to get rid of a few. But the bottom line is we have what we need now. All you have to do is the will. Most, I would tell you this, most talk shows that I've listened to, I've seen, have had some very good information presented. The problem is, for the most part of the good information, the people don't implement it. That's the problem. They don't even try. They know it, but they don't do nothing. We will find the willing, and we will help them take the first step.
Wow. And you know what? I heard what you said about the young brother from Ghana who got into all of the 8 Ivy League colleges and universities. Now, when I saw that, and I'm not hating, but when I saw that, I said, well, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, what is that really going to do for African people, you know? And then you have another young man, I think he's from New Jersey, he got into 5 of them. And the one from Ghana, he got into 8 of them. But my concern, you know, I'm concerned, like, what is that really going to do for African people? That's my concern. What are your thoughts on that?
I have a lot of young people from Africa on Facebook who communicate with me. I never met them, just strictly they like something they saw about me or whatever. And they said, I'm talking about everything from hip-hoppers, rappers, to just regular people, young people. And I'm telling you, I saw one guy in Kenya, in the ocean. He's a hip hopper.
Uh-huh.
And that song he made, he was shackled around his neck, his arm, his leg. He was a slave. And the words and the things he was doing that, I had never seen. It was remarkable. these people, there are a lot of people out here have depend on inferior, but anything inferior is this can be useful than nothing at all. So they have taken up on themselves the best they can to educate themselves, and there's a lot of support out there. I'm proud of a lot of people, you know, even though they need more help and so forth. It's a lot of them out there doing the best they can. I'm proud of that, especially Empress. I can't think of his name, but the rapper.
I know. Oh yeah, we're gonna tell y'all about that. Dr. Shanti sent me this video. I'm calling him because we got to get him on. He did this video. His name is Brother Tahir. RBG.
Okay.
RGB. Wait a minute, red, black, red. RBG. And he put this video out in response to Nicki Minaj and Lil Wayne. Oh, my gosh. And the beautiful thing about this video is he literally does a ritual on the video. And let them know.
Man.
Y'all want to put our heroes in your music? Let me tell you what's going to happen to you.
Okay.
It's wonderful. But hold that point. We got another caller at 2640. We want to get you in before it's too late because we only have about 10 minutes. 2640, your mic is open.
Yes, ma'am. Wakwaba, Dr. Nana, Fahim Ashanti, how are you doing?
Is this my thing?
Yes, it's my thing.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for calling.
Yes,
this is
sir.
The first time with this young man. He's special.
All right.
Yes, I was one of Dr. Ashanti's students. I happened to been fortunate while he was still working at the university setting
mm-hmm.
to be a mm-hmm. part of his program back in 1999. I was a sophomore, and at that time, as he's been talking about, I experienced stress.
Yes.
And as a result, I entered his program, and from there, you know, just as he described, I was able to, with the tools and the repairing of the mind, was able to not only complete my bachelor's degree, continue on and complete my PhD, while continuing to be a research assistant of his. And so he's the knowledge that he's instilling with you, I've had an opportunity and still have an opportunity to receive that knowledge on a daily basis. And as a result, I'm actually, you know, you're speaking about these organizations. I've actually written a book addressing through my experience in the public schools and through being a research assistant of Dr. Ashanti's, written a book dealing with public school education versus charter school education, the whole idea of being deficient curriculum.
Wow.
That,
wonderful.
So just as Dr. Ashanti's book is going to be released soon, my book as well is going to be released in that same time frame. And I definitely going to be a book for all those people out there, like Dr. Ashanti shares. This is not for everybody. However, for those people, those Afrocentrics that want to run an Afrocentric school, this is a book that they must have.
Excellent.
So,
okay.
Out.
And you know, I want to share my dissertation was on. I argued in my dissertation that it's the leadership of schools identifying themselves as Afrocentric, African-centered, are not that themselves, and they're not practicing that in their lives, they're not living that, then the school is not Afrocentric or African-centered. It's not. You know, and I successfully argued that when I interviewed the leaders of the school and simply asked them one question, what was the African worldview? And none of them knew the answer. None
mm-hmm.
of them.
Mm-hmm. And see, my book addresses that because let me share this with you. It's one thing, as I was taught, it's one thing to not know. However, it's another thing to know and still reject the truth of what you know is right to implement for the students. So that is what addresses. Yep.
And you know, if I may, charter schools, they won't allow, the state does not allow for African-centered education. It doesn't.
Well, actually, they are providing money for charter schools.
Yes.
However, though, a lot of the money is not given to African American charter or Afrocentric charter schools. And when they are given to Afrocentric charter school, because of brainwashing, this idea of trust and not knowing how economics and our mind works and money, it then creates a situation when money is given that these schools don't stay in operation for so long.
What we found,
Brother, if I may, is I'm not sure, you know, exactly what's going on there, but I could tell you firsthand here, and also Sister Iya, one of the problems here in Philadelphia, and why I've taken the position that our focal point is an independent school.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
to fight these people in terms of the tax dollars that are going into so-called public school, because, see, a charter school really is still a public school.
It
and
sure
what we
want
to now look at is how to have our own school, not that's run by the system or funded by the system in that way. So we're really looking at having our own curriculum, our own everything, and challenging this system, meaning, for example, today we had a meeting on gentrification, and it is my belief that gentrification is connected to miseducation and so forth, being that 50 schools have been closed in Chicago, 28 have been closed in Philadelphia, and so forth and so on. So gentrification meaning displacement, meaning population control, meaning social engineering, that's a part of this education thing or the dismantlement of it, which is getting ready to go to private sources in many states. But the thing here in Philly is many of the charter schools are just an extension of the public school in terms of their mentality, be the Afrocentric or not. And so what our position is, while, you know, we'll still support, you know, those that we can that have charter schools, our position is our own schools, our own independent schools, that these people can have nothing to say about whatsoever. That's the direction that we have to now look at. We haven't seen the charter thing for, what, 20 years now? But where's our independent school? Where's the call for that nowadays? Where's the struggle for that? Where's the attainment of that? Unless we're talking about that, for real, we have all the books in the world. But if we ain't getting our own schools and educate our own children the way we want to and don't have to worry about nobody looking over our shoulder, then we're not getting what really needs to be going on right now.
Mm-hmm. And I can definitely relate and understand, speaking to your point. However, the one thing about that I was taught in terms of Afrocentricity is you should be able to have the ability to ask questions. And the question that I would like to ask you and your listeners is that, do you see other races also saying the same thing in terms of this separation or having their own separate schools and things of that nature? No, a lot of them still go to public education and still do what they have to do. So I'm not saying that solution is not valid, but you talked about the mindset, and it's the mindset, the understanding of the mind to then operate into your environment and still do what you need to do. So that is the perspective of the viewpoint that I'm coming from, is making that observation given the situation with other races and their ability to move around and operate in the school and still do what they have to do.
I really thank you for what you're saying, and we're going to talk more about that. We only have a few more minutes. We're going to get one more caller in, but again, we're going to continue with part two and part three, so don't worry. We're going to continue this. I do want to add this, though. Remember, those other people, they got their own language, they got their own religion, they got their own cultures, and within their home, That's not what's going on with us. So we can't compare ourselves to them. Or not compare ourselves. We can't even look at that realistically in the same kind of way.
Yeah.
Stay right there, all of you. Caller, you're at 7509. We're going to open up your mic. We only have a few minutes, so get right to it. 7509, your mic is open.
Yes, sister. Can you hear me?
Yep, gotcha.
Sister,
go ahead.
All right, yes.
Yes.
In relation to what the brother just said about other individuals participating in the public schools, one, when you are living in a system that wasn't designed for or by you, all right, then you're at an extreme disadvantage, and we have been disenfranchised. Integration was the worst thing that ever happened to us. We had more black schools, more black banks, more black hospitals. We had self-determination because legislation indicated so, and the hearts of individuals. And you can pass legislation, all right, that will allow for you to integrate, but you can't legislate hate out of people's hearts. So I would remind that young brother that you know, atrocities and abominations that we have suffered at the hands of individuals who have carved up spheres of influence all over the world, you are not going to tell me at any given time that there is going to be parity or equity built into a system that wasn't created for or by you. And I will also share this with you, that atrocities and abominations that we have suffered at the hands of the conqueror, all right, for his story is just that, his story. And everything that comes with him as a result of his conquest is aimed to benefit solely his particular purpose, aim, goal, and objective. And so therefore, hurt and pain, when we talk about healing, we have to think about the atrocities and abominations, i.e. the hurt and pain, that have cellular memory attached to them. All right? For everything has cellular memory. We must remember that. Thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you, Brother Anawasi. I know your voice.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, you'll be hearing more from him very soon. He is a healer, one of the best here in Philly. And we're going to be doing some sessions with him as well. As the weather gets warmer, we're going to have on-site training and all kinds of things for you. But this brother has a potion, I'm going to call it a potion, but it's a herbal and vegetable combination. I've tried this, folks, and y'all know I'm real particular. I don't just be trying stuff and don't want it. So I tried this. It was excellent. And so one of the things we want you all to know is that we're going to be marketing. We're going around this entire summer to a lot of the festivals and events, and we're going to be checking on merchants that got dynamite products for hair, skin, and for the internal use as well. And MWM is going to be in the business of marketing. Iya Adua is going to be on board with that. So, again, if you all know of a product, it can be, again, for hair, skin, personal use, vitamin, or whatever that our people are manufacturing. We don't care what city you're in, okay? My brother has a warehouse, so we don't care where you're at. We can do it.
Therefore,
let us know. Let us know, okay? Brother Anawasi, thank you. I'm going to call you tomorrow because we need to talk later on this week anyway. But we're down only to a few minutes. I want to give Dr. Ashanti the opportunity to give us our closing words for tonight, family. We'll be back on Monday evening. Dr. Ashanti, what time is good for you for Monday? We can go as early as 8, or we can go back to 10:30. It's totally up to you.
I would say 10:30.
Okay,
I don't know if we get a more set of listeners at an earlier time or later. I really don't know, but 8 o'clock is fine.
Let's do it in between. Let's say 9.
that's excellent. This coming Monday.
Yep, this coming Monday, part two.
Sounds good. I'm very excited about this.
Yes.
Yes, we are too. All right, family, we are going to get ready to close out. We're going to give our elder, our Baba, the opportunity to say our closing words for tonight, and we will be back on Monday, 9 o'clock, to let people know. We're going to be sending out e-blasts in our texts as usual as well, but in the meantime, Dr. Shanta, you got it.
I'm going to give a closing prayer and a benediction in the Ashanti Twi language and ask for blessings and protection on all of our listeners and the willing. Oyakapon Twiti and Pram Kwame, Asafiya Insa, Nananam Abason Fo, Bosom Atifi, Anofo, Apui, Atoe, Nsa, Nananam Insua, Asasi, Ijai, and Prama, Nananam Atato, Nsa, Nananam Abusha, Insa, Miyo, Miko, Ayame, Miko Pre, Asasi, Amen.
Yes, before we leave, Dr., could you just tell for those of us who would like to know just a little bit what the prayer said?
It says, I call on the God, the male God of creation, whose name is Enyame. I call on the female goddess of creation, whose creation is the earth, whose name is Asasi Yah. I call on all of the gods, the children of the gods. I first call on the God of the north, the south, the east, and the west, and I offer each one of them a drink. I then call on the God of the earth, fire, air, and water, and I offer either one of them a drink. And then I call on the mother, the father of all of the gods, of the creator gods, whose name is Etano, the Tano River. Then I call on the unseen spirit that's there, who guides and works on our behalf, and collectively known as Abushia. Then I call on, I call on male creator. Then I call on the field creator. Then when I went, I'm saying in short form, the blessing on our listeners, our people, happiness, peace, and reward. And then I say amen, which is an original African God that was first identified in ancient Kemet. And the present-day people today of Ghana are the descendants of those very people to this very day. And the Dinkra symbols and the Kente cloth are religious cloths that represent all that I've said.
All right, family. Well, I don't think there's too much more that needs to be said for right now. So with that said, we want to thank you all for tuning in. Wow, it's been another powerful segment, and we will continue on Monday. Until then, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'ad and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real Hotep, meaning peace, till there's truly Ma'ad, meaning justice, balance, reciprocity, but particularly justice. Well, again, we want to thank Dr. Ashanti for joining us, and he will be back with us on Monday, 9 o'clock. We're going to leave out what other better way than with Fela Kuti.
Until
next time, family, love you all. Promote your Tutashinda. Together, we shall win. Peace out.